Good afternoon. My name is Chris Newell, and I'm one of the partners here at the Harbor Group of RBC Dominion Securities, and it's my pleasure today to host the call with our lead strategist, Robin Gullison. Robin has authored a report entitled Canada Leading G7 for Economic Growth, but Not Being Reflected in the TSX. A bit of a mouthful of a title. So in recent monthly conference calls, we focused an awful lot on U.S. markets, and for today, we're going to focus a little bit more on domestic or Canadian markets. Robin, could you walk us through the summary points of your report?
Sure. Thanks, Chris, and thanks, everybody, for dialing in on a pretty nice day today after so much cold on the weekend. And, you know, the main points in our report have been that, interestingly, Canada has had the strongest economic growth in the G7 this year, and that's been reflected in things like the currency, the strength we've seen in the Canadian dollar, interest rates, which have gone up significantly. So, you know, five-year bond yields have gone from 0.5%, a little over a year ago, to about 1.5% today. So there's some parts of the market where this strong economic growth has been very well represented, but that place has not been the TSX. You know, the TSX is about flat and maybe down 1% year to date, even though Canada's had very strong growth. And I think part of that is that the market had a very strong performance last year. And as we've said many times, markets tend to be discounting mechanisms. And we think that that strong performance last year in the TSX was pricing in the growth we're now getting this year. And of course, it's a little frustrating as an investor to see all this great news about the Canadian economy, but our market not doing very well. And just some examples of this, you know, the energy sector has been a culprit once again. Even though oil prices are well off the lows of 2016, some of the companies in the energy sector are trading at levels they were trading below the levels they were trading at, pardon me, during early 2016. So that's fairly frustrating. And then on the other side, we've had a good performance out of the U.S. market this year. But again, that stronger Canadian dollar, when we translate returns back to Canadian dollar terms, has dragged on performance. So even though a stronger Canadian dollar is good for us as Canadians, as consumers, it gives us more purchasing power. As far as a portfolio, a diversified portfolio of international securities, it does drag on the return in the short term. So we think there's significant scope as the year goes on for us to get some of that return back via a return to the mean on the TSX's valuation, which I'll get to further in the package. We also think there's some scope for the Canadian dollar to give back some of its strength, as we think the strength in the Canadian economy may not continue through the end of the year, and maybe the strength in the currency may cause the Bank of Canada to back off things a little bit.
Terrific. Thanks, Robin, for your overview. You know, the next page, you include a chart that says Canada is leading the global growth parade. You know, what does this mean? Can you give some clarity to this?
Sure. It simply means that the economic growth we've seen so far in Canada, north of 3% this year, is stronger than what we've seen in the U.S., Europe, and Japan. By quite a significant margin. And the chart on page 3 is what they call an economic surprise index. And that's just a fancy way of saying, you know, is economic data coming through better or worse than expected? So when this line is above zero, and right now it's almost at a 7-year high, it tells you that the economic data has been coming through much better than economists projected. And I would kind of put a caveat there in saying that, you know, Canada should be having strong growth right now, because if you look back a year ago, and I'll note that the GDP data we have is from back in May, you look at what happened back in May 2016, you were coming out of the oil crunch, and you also had the forest fires in Fort McMurray, which really dampened economic growth. So it's encouraging that we've got strong growth this year, but we also should have strong growth this year because we came out of a weak patch last year.
Interesting. Thank you. On your next page, you give us a little bit of a synopsis as to how the Canadian market and how the U.S. market have done both last year and this year. And for those individuals who don't happen to have a chart pack in front of them, could you just let us know what information is contained?
Absolutely. So last year was a great news story for the TSX. So even though you had weak growth, you had a lot of bad things happening. They all happened early in the year, and you had some weakness in the beginning of the year, but you ended the year up 17.5% in the TSX. The S&P 500 still did quite well, up about 9.5% last year. You go to this year, the TSX is around flat year-to-date, after today probably down 1% or so. The S&P is up about 10%. So if you combine those two numbers over 2 years, the returns are fairly similar, but you got a lot of the TSX return last year, and it's just lagging this year because, again, we priced in a lot of good news in the TSX last year. Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
And when you factor in the currency, you know, what do the returns look like, you know, that last year and this year?
Well, currency is a tricky thing, and some years it's given us a lot of benefit. 2015 would be a great example of that, where you had a 19% rally in the U.S. dollar versus the Canadian dollar, and that allowed portfolios to really avoid some of the poor performance we saw in Canada and the TSX, that huge run of the Canadian dollar. Since then, the Canadian dollar has been taking a bit of its gains back, particularly this year with the surprise move from the Bank of Canada. So if you look on a currency-adjusted basis, last year the S&P 500 in Canadian dollars was up 6.5%. This year it's up about 4.5%. So still doing better than the TSX. That foreign diversification is still additive to portfolios, without a doubt, but the currency is making it maybe not as great as it should be.
And just as a reference point, a little off script and outside of your chart pack, but how have GICs done? So a guaranteed investment certificate, or how have, you know, plain vanilla corporate bonds done on a year-to-date basis?
So GICs, frustratingly for us as investors, have not seen their yields go up. Yields have gone up in the bond market, not even close. So a one-year GIC bought a year ago from a high-quality issuer was maybe bought at something like 1.25%. So 1.25%, a little more than halfway through the year, you're still well south of 1% through the year-to-date, and that's, of course, all interest income, which is fully taxable.
Okay.
And the bond market would be even worse because we've had a significant run of interest rates. Bond market, you know, with reinvested income is probably flat to down maybe 0.5%.
A tough backdrop for Canadian domiciled investors.
Very much so. The one, I guess, bright shining light has been the preferred share market, particularly the rate reset preferred share market, and this was a source of frustration for a couple of years for a lot of people, us included, but it has come absolutely roaring back, and our one thesis for keeping these in portfolios is that this is one of the rare asset classes that would do well when interest rates go up, and that has happened in spades this year. So it was definitely worth hanging on through those difficult times to get to the other side in that market.
Thank you. And you know, with the more challenging performance that we've seen out of the Canadian market this year, is this as a result of corporate profitability being poor, or is this as a result of sentiment change? Can you give a little light as to, you know, why this has happened and perhaps what we should expect on a go-forward basis?
Sure. I think a lot of it is sentiment-based. So the corporate profits in Canada have been quite reasonable. The big sector weights, such as the banks and the bigger industrials like the rails, have been doing fine. A lot of the consternation comes back down to the energy sector, and there it's not even as much earnings-related but sentiment. If you look at the headlines out of the energy patch, it seems like almost every large foreign investor or foreign oil company, save Imperial Oil, has sold out their interest in their Canadian assets, and the Canadian companies have been the buyers. So it tells you if that's a proxy for international sentiment towards Canadian energy, it's not a very good one. So that's weight on the energy sector, and of course the energy sector is still a very large weight in the TSX. So that is weight on the index's performance. And it's also been that the U.S. market, while it's been strong and it's had some good earnings growth, a lot of it's also been because price-earnings ratios have gone higher. And in Canada, they've stayed relatively flat. And on page 6 of the presentation, I take a look at the P.E. ratio of the TSX and then subtract out the P.E. ratio for the S&P 500. And it shows that over the long term, you know, going back to 10 years to 2007, they've been fairly equal within maybe 1 point of each other. If you look at where we are today, the P.E. ratio on the S&P 500 is almost 2 points higher than the TSX, or shown on this chart, the TSX P.E. ratio is almost 2 points lower than the S&P 500. And that's actually the lowest it's been back to 2008. And typically what we've seen over the past decade is when you get these kind of deep discounts for the TSX versus the S&P 500, you've tended to take some performance back after that troughs out. So we're optimistic that there's going to be some sort of reversion to the mean as far as valuations go. I know a lot of people are concerned about valuations in the U.S. and Canada, it's really not much of a concern. I'd say it's one of the more encouraging things we see in Canada.
So I think it would be fair to say then, based on your commentary, that the fundamentals on both sides of the border are very good. The economies on both sides of the border are doing well. Corporate profitability is doing quite well, although sentiment hasn't been very strong in the Canadian market, and that's something that you think could change as a result of strong fundamentals.
Certainly.
Terrific. On page number 7, you have a very interesting title that says, "Don't count the energy sector out just yet." You know, certainly energy has been a disappointment in terms of performance over the course of this calendar year. Can you share with us what you're trying, the point you're trying to get across here?
Sure, and I'll apologize in advance. This is a fairly complicated chart, but really it simply looks at the price-to-book value of the TSX energy sector, and specifically the exploration and production subsector. So this is simply oils that explore for and pump oil out of the ground. It doesn't include things like the pipelines, which would alter this a bit because they trade on slightly different fundamentals than the pure oil stocks. And this tells you that the price-to-book multiple on these companies is near the lowest it's been since the 1990s. And typically, when you get the valuations this low, you tend to have fairly strong returns in the 12 months afterward. And it doesn't, of course, tell you the exact time. It tells you on a go-forward basis, you're set up for a pretty good batting average.
Thank you. Let's turn our attention a little bit towards the currency. So the Canadian dollar has historically been correlated with interest rates and with energy prices. You know, perhaps you could share with us the correlation towards interest rates and what that's looked like over the course of the year. Has that been a major driver for why the Canadian dollar has gone up?
It's been almost the entire driver. So we have charts on page 8 and page 9 looking at this. Page 8 looks at the correlation with interest rates. Page 9 looks at the correlation with crude oil. And you can see by flipping between these two pages that the correlation with interest rates, and that interest rate simply shows the difference between Canadian and U.S. two-year bond yields, and that's basically the bond market telling you whose interest rates are changing at the margin. And, of course, with the Bank of Canada going from talking about cutting rates to raising rates in July, there's been a huge shift in Canadian rate expectations. While in the U.S., it's been much more of a steady state. We kind of know what the Fed's up to, and that hasn't really changed. Therefore, Canadian rates have gone up a lot more than U.S., and that's really driven the Canadian dollar quite significantly. On page 9, you can see on the crude oil chart, which is the dark line, and the gold line is the Canadian dollar, in U.S. cents, you can see that correlation. It's still there. Some of it is down. It's not nearly as tight as it was a couple of years ago. So really, it's been all about interest rates so far this year.
Thank you, Robin. And, you know, we've seen a fairly large move on the Canadian dollar, moving from the low 70s and cresting the 80-cent move. You know, are we halfway towards 90 cents as the Canadian dollar, you know, carries on with this strength, or have we already seen the bulk of the strength in the Canadian dollar behind us? What's our perspective?
I think we've already seen the bulk of the strength in the Canadian dollar behind us. I think one of our technical analysts at RBC put it best. His view is that the Canadian dollar is in a 70 to 80 cent range, and you tend to want to buy it near the bottom of that range, sell it near the top. We're just cresting the top of that range, and we're coming lower, and I think unless something changes meaningfully, we probably stay in that fairly tight range. And there's a few reasons I think that 80 cents was probably a near-term top. Number one is that interest rates, you know, a lot of good news has been priced into the interest rate market and into the Canadian dollar. And I think that people may be a little over-optimistic about Canadian growth. As much as it is, as fun as it is to see strong Canadian growth data, we still have the NAFTA renegotiations coming up that the currency market is not paying a lot of attention to. And, of course, the Toronto housing market, it seems like it's softened fairly significantly. We don't know what the implications are of that yet. But if that would become something that becomes a problem, I think the Bank of Canada would stop in its tracks pretty quickly. And I also can't imagine the Bank of Canada is that happy with a north of 80 cent loonie.
Thank you. You know, perhaps you could summarize the main points that you've made in today's presentation. And then after that, I have a few off-scripted ad hoc questions for you.
Okay, great. So in summary, you know, we've had great economic performance in Canada this year that's been reflected to a very large degree in the bond market and especially the Canadian dollar. Unfortunately for us as investors, it has not been reflected in the TSX. We think that has scope to change later this year because we think the TSX is one of the better valued markets in the global equity markets. We've also had a bit of a drag from the currency for our foreign holdings. I think that has the potential to reverse as well, adding to performance. So I think a lot of the forces that have worked against us as investors in the first half of 2017 have the potential to turn as the year goes on and renew the performance in portfolios as we close out the year.
Thank you very much. So in advance of today's call, I received a few questions from clients that wanted you to address these questions on the call, and I'll ask them here. The first question is there a seasonality to markets that we should be aware of? Part one and part two, should we be taking any action as a result of it?
That's a great question, and it's something that comes up a lot of the time as we hit August, September, October, because those historically are the weakest months. But, you know, over a very long period of time, these trends do play out. So, you know, the September, October tend to be the weaker months. But if you look at the probability of having a positive return versus a negative return, even for the worst months, you know, in the U.S. market, September is negative about 52% of the time, and that's the worst month. So even then, the so-called worst month for stocks, it's still a coin flip as to whether you're going to have a positive or negative return. So over a long period of time, these trends have played out, but in any given year, it is a coin flip, as that data showed. And for the last few years, it actually hasn't worked out. So we don't think it's a particularly good idea to take significant action in portfolios ahead of these months just because the calendar is turning, because we don't think for the odds of a coin flip or worse, it makes a lot of sense to trigger capital gains. And then it's a lot harder to get back into the market, especially if it rallies on us. And, of course, you miss the dividend income in between as well.
Thank you. Very different topic. The next question is, are tech stocks overvalued?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's one that could be asked by almost any high-performing sector. But, of course, the U.S. technology in particular has been very strong this year. The performance has been very strong. And these are high-growth companies. So looking at them on a traditional valuation lens, as you might other companies, is going to be a little different because they have stronger growth and they tend to have very high margins. You know, our internet analyst, a fellow named Mark Mahaney, is a top-ranked internet analyst. He works at RBC, and he'll tell you that these are fantastic companies. They have a lot of growth ahead of them, and he has an outperform rating on most of the big popular tech stocks, and he's done a very good job at it. But I think he'd also tell you that these tend to be volatile stocks, and so far this year, that volatility has been one way, straight up, but it is not unusual for these companies to have corrections of 20 to 30% in any given year with no change in the underlying fundamentals of the company. So these are not telephone stocks. These are not utilities, even though they've had the same volatility as those stocks this year. There's potential for corrections in them. So I think that's something investors in them have to be prepared for. But, you know, you get rewarded typically with stronger growth over a long period of time for people who have the patience and can stomach that volatility potential.
So it sounds like what you're saying is for individuals who are looking to get into the tech stock market, exude some patience and look for some volatility as an entry point, and perhaps for people who are overweight them and have a substantial position, might not be a bad opportunity to trim a little bit.
I think that's very prudent advice.
Now, the last question is, should we be doing anything about the situation in North Korea? And, you know, certainly that's it seems to be an issue that's becoming heated and politicized. You know, what are your views?
That's a difficult question, to be honest with you, because it's obviously a question that is evolving, and we don't know how much of this is rhetoric or how much of this is playing out through back channels with other nations. But this is something we're keeping an eye on, but I think very difficult, again, to take portfolio action around. Because what we've seen with a lot of these geopolitical crises is some of them do cause a correction in the market, and that correction tends to end on the day of the big events, so the day that the hostilities ensue. An example of this would be the Iraq war back in 2003. The market corrected, and then that basically put in the low for the cycle when they first started dropping bombs back in 2003. And some of these other events that have happened, like the Cuban Missile Crisis, for example, the market barely blinked. So there isn't really long-term, you know, game plan you can look at and say this is what you do when you have a geopolitical crisis. We kind of go back to first principles and look at the underlying fundamentals. Is this changing the fundamentals of the economy? Is it increasing the chances of a recession in the U.S.? Is it going to change the trajectory of monetary policy? Right now, the answer to that seems to be no, but could it cause some volatility and a correction, and should people be prepared to take action in the context of a correction? Sure, absolutely. We always give that advice.
Terrific. Well, Robin, thank you very much for taking the time today to take us through your report. And again, for all of our listeners, I invite you to ask questions ahead of the conference calls, and I'll be sure to pose them to Robin on your behalf. And with that, we wish you a continued enjoyable summer and look forward to connecting again in a month's time. Thank you.